Call forth the legend of the one-win world champion. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. And you thought Nicky Hayden won a world title on consistency. Hey guys, welcome to episode 280 of Motorsport 101. Dre Harrison back at it once again for a brand new episode for you. And with me again, we got RJ O'Connell. Hello, sir.
And don't worry, y'all. We've got a special weapon for speed. American Grizzly Magazine. And now we got to send for the man because I got the whole podcast for him.
This would be so much better if Jack Miller won the race. So much better.
My God, it would have been perfect, wouldn't it? Jesus. Now, for the lack of context as to how we record this show, because now I feel like I kind of have to fill this in. In between the episode recordings for episodes 279 and 80, RJ insisted we watch a famous Jackass clip of quote-unquote, the Spermathon.
So what is the premise of the Spermathon? Well, all the guys get together and decide to donate a sample and have a competition based on count, volume, and speed.
How do people still listen to us on here? King, restore some order.
I'm just here to say that I'm glad that we could see some success in Orange because the NBA draft is tonight. And
oh yeah.
I'm
King. Remind the masses what your fandom lies.
The New York Knickerbockers.
Oh, King, think of it this way. It can only get better.
Can it?
And somewhere
I'll give you some hope.
Somewhere Stephen A. Smith just screamed very loudly into the void as Dre said that.
Oh.
enjoying himself his own rendition of the Utah Pizza Game. Hi, Cam. Hi, Cam Buckley.
Oh, I feel like shit. I feel so, so terrible. But I'm here to celebrate our new world champion, the truth. And no, not Paul Pierce.
Not Ron Killings.
You sure about that one?
No. No, Paul Pierce was only a champion in 2008.
It's a miracle.
He wasted most of his prime, unlike Suzuki with Joan Mir.
It's a miracle. A miracle on 36th Street.
Thanks, I hate it.
Oh, you love it.
No, I really don't. But that's and even as Cam's lungs, apparently. But but in this episode 280, we are going to break down MotoGP at Valencia, the second of the two Valencia weekends, the actual
Valencia 2.
Valencia.
Electric Boogaloo.
We don't race Formula E this year, Cam. Get it right.
We did.
Earlier.
A little bit.
But this was significant for one important reason. A new world champion was crowned as Joan Mir took it home in P8 and became the 2020 MotoGP world champion. Marquez has been dethroned. The king is dead. Long live the king. And not just the one on the other side of the podcast.
King's right here.
But we'll figure out how we got there and how we had a fantastic fight for the win between Frankie Morbidelli and someone from the crew of Jackass. And we'll also break down a dramatic Moto 2 race that had serious implications for one title contender and Moto 3 because we got a three-way title finale going that way in the lightweight category as well. So all of that, as well as the Valencia Grand Prix, in the next 35 to 40 minutes or so, basically. So, without further ado, we'll break down how you can follow us and all that good stuff. Of course, unless you're watching us right now, we're on youtube.com/motorsport101. Subscribe if you haven't already. Hit the bell. You can find out when our next stuff's coming, of course. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter, @motorsport_101. Our personal handles are on the screen right now. But if you're listening to the audio version, we're @Harrison101HD, @RJ O'Connell, @OrionEricKing, and @CBuckley917. And if you really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you into the $5 gets you early access to all our audio shows. The $10 version gets you in the supporters club of our Discord server, where you can listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded, and you get all the early access for the video and audio shows as well. So you can check that out if you haven't already, and you can find all those details and more on our website, motorsport101.com. All of that on there as well, including a cool blog for you written stuff as well. But without further ado, let's break down the 2020 Valencia Grand Prix. The theme of the weekend in motorsport continued as MotoGP's first match point for 2020 became available for one Joan Mir. And it looked like we were in for a spicy one when Frankie Morbidelli took pole position in changeable conditions. Bit of sprinklings of rain here and there, with Jack Miller close behind for Pramac and Taka Nakagami again on the front row. The major title contenders tripping over themselves once again, with Maverick Viñales 6th, Fabio Quartararo down in 11th, and champion-elect Mir himself in 12th. For the second race in a row, major title implications on the opening lap as Fabio Quartararo got bumped at the Turn 2 apex and fell all the way to the bottom of the board. Mir gained 2 spots going up to 10th, meaning he was now champion-elect as things stood, with Maverick having to sink down to 11th with another poor start, and then even worse, Fabio himself crashing out at Turn 2 on lap 9, ending his title campaign altogether. At the front, the only other eligible contender was now leading the race as Frankie tried to break free from Jack Miller, but even the win wouldn't be enough as Mir was up to 8th after Johann Zarco crashed at Turn 1. Also, heartbreak for the M101 Discord server as Taka fell as he tried to pass Pola Spagaro for a podium spot at the final corner. Good one.
Pain! Pain!
Deep pain.
Why can't anyone make the pain go away?
That was the softest King's ever spoken on this server. Amazing. The race was largely pretty stable besides that initial opening drama until the end as Jack Miller threw the house trying to pass Frankie for the win on the final lap, including a bold block pass attempting to turn 4 that Frankie would counter. The turn-in weakness of the Ducati showed once again as Frankie Morbidelli held on for the win by just under a 10th of a second. But none of that really mattered as Joan Mir crossed the line in 8th safely to win the 2020 MotoGP World Championship. And with Suzuki also seeding the team title as well, it would be the first major titles for Suzuki as a team since Kenny Roberts Jr. in 2000. This on their 100th anniversary as a manufacturer. Ladies and gentlemen, we have it. He's done it. Joan Mir is the new world champion.
Consistency who would have guessed that? Wins championships.
It's incredible. It's like we would never have guessed this. Even in July when the season restarted, you would never have guessed in a million years that Mir would be the one that would come through and win it. We still looked at him as
even months into the season.
We still looked at him as like a promising midfielder last year. We're not thinking title contender, and then Styria happened. Styria happened, and I think that was the flashpoint that turned him into a different rider almost overnight. I remember that race, like, he should have won in Styria. He had a 3-second lead, and then the red flag came out, and Maverick had to leap off his motorcycle. He hasn't got a new set of tires to put on. He limps home in 5th, and then ever since then, result, 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 again and again.
Third, passing people in San Marino. Second, in Emilia Romagna.
I say,
second,
that's the one
the
for
Catalan
me.
Catalan Grand Prix.
It was that first. That first podium in Austria just set him up for the rest of the year. He was relentless in every race since, barely finishing off the podium. Second, just, fourth, just, third, second, second, 11th, and I don't even remember what happened at that race.
Just poor.
I think that was just Suzuki was off the pace there. Third, at Le Mans.
Yeah,
and Le Mans was all over the place. That
it was a
was
wet race,
wild.
And he had never raced a premier class bike in the wet before.
His first ever wet race. Yeah, that's what did it.
Yeah, because I'm looking where I'm looking.
Can we just say though that, like, in the history of MotoGP, we have one race to go. If Johan Mir finished the season without ever winning a race, this will be the least amount of wins that a top class World Grand Prix motorcycle racing champion has ever won to win the title. Nicky Hayden got two wins. And then you have to go back to guys who raced in the 1940s and 50s to find somebody who... Nobody's ever won the title having won just one race.
Never in the top flight.
And clinching it with a round in hand, no less.
Yep.
That's the craziest thing. He won one race all season and he won it with a round to spare, comfortably. Like, what... That's just utterly ridiculous. And yeah, it, as you guys alluded to, just bulletproof consistency was always there. Didn't matter where he qualified, would always gain ground. If he felt good on the bike, he was on the podium in the second half of the season.
Yeah, his lowest representative finish in the second half of this season was fourth in Styria, which, as you said, he should have won. In France, he was the highest Suzuki, and he had never raced in the rain before. And in Valencia, he just decided to do what was necessary for the title. He didn't bother to push any further.
Yeah, simple as that. Just took it and just, and where everybody else tripped up over each other, had bad rounds, like Dovi being taken out, and you know Morbidelli and Quartararo really struggling in the latter half of the year, especially Quartararo. We'll get to him in a minute, but just guys just tripping over each other. Mir was the one that would always stand through. In the end, and yeah, that's what made the difference in the end. It was consistency, consistency, consistently just smashed out results. Didn't best take finish. Any necessary chances.
Best finish in 2019 of fifth in Australia. This year in representative rounds. In representative rounds, his lowest finish was fifth.
Yeah, that's just ridiculous. Utterly ridiculous. And I think there's going to be a lot of people in that field that are going to be just tripping. Like they're going to be so upset that they didn't win the title this year. Because, like, there was a golden chance for five or six riders in this field to win the title. And if circumstances were a little bit different, Dovi and his tyres not working out on the Michelin this year. You know, Rins, if he didn't injure himself in qualifying at the very first round, I think he would have been right up there this year, without a doubt. Frankie Morbidelli will probably rue that blown engine in the second Jerez race. Yeah, where he was
that's the one that I'm thinking of in hindsight, because win, if he didn't blow that engine early in the year, we would be having many, many different discussions about the tone of Franco Morbidelli's season, which, by the way, is an accomplishment of itself. But I'm just glad that people are being rational and not slapping this title with an asterisk because Marc Marquez got himself injured in the first race. It's the same opportunity for everybody else on the grid, and Johan Mir was the one that took advantage of it.
Yep.
Absolutely. Yeah, if anything, it's been more the media trying to spin that up than the actual fans I've seen in discourse on the internet. Everyone was just like, yeah, Mir was great, deserved it. No problem, no questions asked.
Well, and one quote-unquote divisive HRC boss.
Well, we all know what that man is like. But, you know, look, your man's made a mistake. Unfortunately, it was one that cost in the end. This was the whole theme of the year. Given it was only a 14-race calendar to begin with, a mistake would be punished that much more due to the smaller calendar. It's probably what cost Rins a championship shot. It's probably what cost Crutchlow a championship shot. You know, injuring themselves early doors. Bagnaia was in the mix. He broke his leg round three, you know. You could just chalk names off the board. Half the paddock was it.
Yeah, the guy who didn't make mistakes won the title.
Yeah, and that's how it should be in motorsport. Even if you only win once, as opposed to four, five, or six times like we normally get with champions in this sport, it's going to be
Johan Mir just out here dropping the full Matt Kenseth on MotoGP.
Oh yeah, and there's something poetically beautiful about that too. Not just the guy that wins 10 rounds and takes the year. There's equal pleasure in seeing the consistency win a championship. I know NASCAR hates that sort of thing, ironically, when you mention Kenseth with their playoff
format. He's the reason we have the playoff system.
Yeah, and yeah, you know, there's quite a unique parallel to that. And look, I want to give a shout out and a salute to all of that Suzuki team. They have worked so hard to get to this point. And let's not forget, they only came back as a manufacturer 5 years ago. And
Dre, we talked about it in your hangout the other day. They were nowhere in 2018.
They were nowhere 2 years ago. They were still reeling from losing Maverick Vinales, and they were trying to find themselves as a team again. And
they thought Andre Iannone was the best they could get to replace Maverick Vinales.
Yeah, and they didn't really have
an engine. They had a good chassis, but they didn't have much power. And you're just wondering, what could they do with this?
Andrea really screwed up the development direction of that bike, and getting him out of that team got them back on track. And it's turned into the bike with the widest operating window. You can make mistakes on the Suzuki, and it will forgive you.
Yeah.
And that allows you to ride the bike into the ground. And unlike the Honda, or to an extent this year, the 2020 Yamaha, you don't need sheer brute talent and strength to bring it back. The bike will let you do it.
Yeah, exactly. That is flexibility and versatility that's what's shined through for them. And like I said, the turnaround in the last 2 years has been incredible. Davide Brivio deserves a hell of a lot of credit. He's the one that gambled on Mir as a talent. I know there was a lot of people lining up for his signature when he was in Moto3, when he won 10 races that year and took the Moto3 title. But, you know, Brivio was able to talk me around, and he was looking a little ropey in Moto2 when he started out, you know, but it was like, nope, we're bringing him up no matter what, basically. Doesn't matter what he does in Moto2. He's come in, and second year in the class, won a world championship. That's an incredible achievement. Like, that is an unbelievable achievement. And, you know, Davide took a punt on him as a talent, and it worked out beautifully. And yeah, a lot of guys get lost in Moto2, and he didn't. And he deserves a lot of praise. Sylvain Guintoli deserves a hell of a lot of praise as test and development rider as well.
Our boy, Ginters.
Our boy, Ginters. As the last remaining member of Bike Live on here, I am delighted that I can say that the Ginters joke has led to a world title for Suzuki. I'm so happy.
Still with Ginters.
Yes! And look, everyone loves Ginters in the paddock. He's basically an Englishman at this point. Everyone loves him in that camp. And I'm so glad that so many people on Twitter paid tribute to Ginters' contribution as well, because he's had a vital hand in developing that Suzuki into what it is today. And he's owed a lot of credit for getting that factory where it is, because, again, as Cam said, they were nowhere 2 years ago, and they've turned themselves from one of the worst factories in the sport to the best factory in the sport, have won 2 championships, and have got a shot at the Triple Crown at Portimao in 2 weeks' town. They're head-to-head with Ducati. It's a straight-up dogfight. They are tied on points going into the final round of the championship.
Their highest rider in 2018 was Rins, 5th in the championship with a single second place, a single third place, and a whole lot of nothing otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I can't read this. It was a few more podiums, but more or less a couple of podiums and then a whole lot of midfield running.
And they've got a good chance at 1 and 2 in the championship next week.
Having half the bikes available, of course, and I think they'll have earned it because, you know, Ducati have
stunk. They stink.
Yeah.
They owe Pramac a fruit basket. A big fruit basket, because Pramac has bailed them out multiple times this year.
Who's to say that Pramac is not the actual factory Ducati team? Who's to say?
And that's what's crazy about all this as well. Like, we forget in the race for the win, like, and how open and how wild this season has been with 5 new winners in it, 9 winners this season in general. It's amazing that a Pramac is not one of those 9 winners this year. And we, again, were a tenth of a second away from a Pramac win today. We have to talk about this because the race was, like, the final lap was in this race between Frankie Morbidelli and Jack Miller was fantastic viewing.
Injected into my veins.
Yeah, this track famously does not promote much in the way of overtaking, but that didn't stop Jack Miller from trying. He threw everything at Frankie to get past.
I'm Jack Miller, and this is Stilt Boxing with a Yamaha. Oh man, what a good
that's
fight.
Going on the M101 Twitter.
Brilliant. Oh, that's so true.
You know what's great?
That's...
You know what threw me off looking at these 2018 results?
What, the fact that the Sixers are trading Al Horford for Danny Green?
Oh.
Why would you say these things? No, the fact that the results table here is split by one race that just says C. You know the one.
Oh, yeah. Silverstone.
Hashtag canceled. Oh, boy. But yeah, this was a great battle.
It's a fantastic battle.
The Ducati's so fucking fast in a straight line.
Yeah, I thought Miller was going to have them. And if he got around, I'm thinking, if he gets around, there's no way he's giving this lead back up. And Morbidelli was just like, well, hold on a minute there, partner. You may have got ahead of me this time, but can you put me away? I don't think so.
Yep, the Ducati's turn in weakness meant that every time Jack pulled off the move, and he pulled it off, I think, about three times over the course of the final lap.
I think the lead switched hands about, like, seven times in that last lap alone.
Yeah, they spent more of the lap alongside each other than not at a track that does not promote passing. But every time he got past, Miller couldn't get the bike turned in to block off the inside. And Frankie could just fire the Yamaha back up the inside on him.
It was art. It was fantastic. And God bless Miller for trying. Yeah, it was fantastic racing. Oh God, that was the second best lap of 2020.
How did I go this long without
Styria.
Watching MotoGP? How did I go this long between stints of like following MotoGP seriously?
Oh, I'm glad we've been able to talk so many people around. A phenomenal avenue for this season. Again, this is between two guys on two independent bikes, clearly fighting for a win. You would never have seen that even 3 years ago, and that's what the sport's
that's
done
a fun
to improve
stat
itself.
As well.
Yeah.
Mir's championship is the first championship since Casey Stoner in 2007 that was not won on a Honda or a Yamaha.
Wow.
That's crazy.
Oh. Goodness gracious.
That is absolutely crazy. Man, like...
These concessions, they work, y'all.
Yep.
That means in the 21st century, it's Roberts, it's Stoner, and it's Alex Rins.
Yeah. It's just...
Mir.
It's Roberts. So, take two... It's Roberts, it's Stoner, and it's Joanne Mir. That's the only three people in the 20th century that have won a championship on something that wasn't a Honda and wasn't a Yamaha.
Yeah. Just unbelievable statistics.
Yeah.
And in this most wild of years, it's kind of fitting.
No kidding.
Speaking of Yamaha. Oh, the post-mortem. If Lynn Jarvis's job wasn't under threat before, sure as hell should be now.
Because I had a thought exercise because a friend of mine texted me, was just like, I don't know about Vinales and Cordararo. And then I just asked him, well, what if you were in charge of Yamaha and you had the opportunity to just completely start from scratch and blow up the team? And if you can't get Mark Marquez, you could get anybody else.
I only drop one rider from any of the four bikes, and that's Valentino, based on he doesn't have his speed anymore, and I go and get Davi. But I don't blow up the team as far as the riders.
The riders are not the aforementioned number one problem. It's a factor.
Number one problem. We'll get into that. I think... They need to blow up their engine department, first of all, because this year was a disaster. And they cheated.
Oh, don't worry. The engine department's already blowing up spectacularly at speed.
Yeah. And I think they really need to integrate some sports psychologists into that team because, man, Vinales and Fabio folded like tissue paper under the pressure this year.
Cordararo should have had this title under lock and key after sweeping Jerez.
Agreed.
After, other than his three wins, he did not score a podium.
Yeah, it's a strange parallel where if he was good, he'd win. If he was bad, he's not on the podium. If he was bad,
he was fringe points.
Yeah, it's so erratic. 13. I mean,
at Styria, 13. And Styrian Grand Prix, aforementioned, crazy shit happened there.
Yeah.
Aragon, pole position, ended up 18th after a tire problem. 14th at the European Grand Prix, and he folded the front twice. And he's just throwing away all kinds of points.
The thing that worries me is Vinales, because we talked about this off-air. Like, he's like one of the few guys that has a genuine X-factor over Marc Marquez, a healthy Marc Marquez. If he gets off to a clean start up front and the bike is just right, he's unbeatable.
Yeah,
but that's such a thin window. Like, we're not talking about prime Seb Vettel 2011, 2013.
No, Vinales, I've called him the king of the hypotheticals before because it's such a fringe case where he's comfortable on the bike. And even this year, he hasn't done it. I think he did it one race all year where he got out to a lead and held on to it. Oftentimes this year, he'll get a good start and then just drop.
Yeah, just drops off like a stone. Like, this race, again, was a peak example of that. Lost 5 places on the opening lap. Started 6th. By the end of lap 1, he was running 11th. You're not going to win races doing that. He gives himself far too much work to do, which is a worrying concern for the guy that might have more raw pace than anyone on the grid, including Mark. He's one of the few guys that has the raw pace to match him. In qualifying,
he doesn't have Mark's flexibility is the problem. Yeah. It's like in 5% of cases, he's fast enough. But look at Phillip Island last year.
Mm.
The Yamaha, in theory, should be out-cornering just about anything. And yet, Mark played with his food for 20 laps. He had that race under lock and key. He just didn't go for the move until right at the end.
Yeah. Look, Fabio, I'm not so concerned about. He's still only 21 years old. He has plenty of time to get it all together. Maverick's 25 now. This is like his fifth season in the top flight. Fifth. Like,
and it started off, remember his first, when he came into Yamaha, still wearing 25, and he reeled off, what, 3 race wins?
Yeah,
just won 3 right of the first 5.
Man was going to be unbeatable in the start of 2017.
We thought, okay, Marquez has found his nemesis. And then he got broken over Marquez's knee and has never really been the same. He'll start off the season, wins their podiums, and then just falls off and never really comes back, save a couple of flashes.
Say what you will about the state of Yamaha. I'll sum it up in one swift sentence. Whatever happens, worst case scenario, they will have a 50% win rate at worst for the season, depending on how Portimao plays out. They'll have nothing to show for it.
No titles, and you cheated.
A 50% win rate would normally get you a championship in most forms of motorsport, one way or another. They're going to have nothing to show for it.
Not only do they have nothing to show for it, there's the best placed rider for Yamaha right now is Franco, who has been the only consistent one other than two, I'm looking at the results right now. He's been the only one who hasn't been just nowhere for sections of the season. He might have one bad race here and there.
It's the early mechanical failures that cost him a legitimate shot at the title.
Yeah,
that
two this, early if retirements. If not for that,
we're having a title-deciding race in Portimao.
But even then, Mir had two retirements early on in the season.
Yeah, it almost doesn't matter in that sense. But look, they should have been up there for the team standings. Look, they have... arguably the best team in the sport in Petronas. They've won 6 races this season. 6. 3
you
each.
Just look at the names. Franco Morbidelli, Fabio Quartararo, and Maverick Vinales. You have 3 of the best young riders, relatively speaking, in the sport. and you won half the races this year. And yet, last year's bike is going to be the highest one in the championship, probably.
Oof.
You cheated.
Yeah.
I can't stress that enough, and that cost you the Constructors' Championship.
Yeah.
And you were going to have nothing minus to 50. Show for it.
Minus 50 in the constructor standings, minus 37 for they lost 57 points between their two factory teams because of the it's illegal WoW situation. It's embarrassing. And if you ask anybody, cheat, you know how bad cheating looks in Japan? I know it's more of a cultural thing, but they look at cheating with tremendous dishonor. Like, this is
hitting a little bit too close to home if you follow Super
RJ, don't. We're not touching that.
It's fine.
But more to the point, I really don't think Fabio and Vinales get along. Those two have had a couple really close calls out on track. We had one on lap one. Fabio outbroke himself and almost took Vinales with him.
Oh, yeah. It was inches.
We'll see what happens in 2021.
Those two on the same team could be caustic.
You can't see it, but I'm eating the popcorn right now. It's delicious.
And I mean, they talked all that good shit coming into the season. After preseason testing, they looked like they were the force. And Mears just come up and rip the title right out from under him.
A lot of people had a feeling that, hey, don't overlook Mir, don't overlook Suzuki.
No. And now is arguably what the Yamaha was a couple years ago. It's like what the 2015 Yamaha was. It has such a wide range of conditions where it is in its element that it works everywhere. Whereas the 2020 Yamaha is almost becoming like the Honda, where if you go over that edge, it'll bite your head off.
Yeah. And that has been what's cost Yamaha so dearly.
It's Honda, but without the upside, because Honda has harnessed the force of a supernova for their engine.
Ironically, you know what it is? It's a prototype version of a Suzuki Hayabusa. But they are deciding to wear their helmets for a change.
Oh God.
Isn't that ironic that Suzuki, the manufacturer of the fastest production bike ever made up to that point, pre-regulations, pre-gentleman's agreement, is winning on a finesse bike.
Yeah.
I think that's just wonderful.
I almost argue it's not even a finesse bike, because you can ride it however you want. The bike is okay with it.
Like a ragdoll. Yeah. It's just versatile. Yeah, and that's what's done them in.
And two out of the three, first and third in the championship.
Yeah, and
it's all Suzuki and Yamaha at the front.
Indeed, crazy stuff. Top five the whole way is very in shades of blue.
Top five, and then there's two fives, because shout outs to Andrea Dovizioso in sixth, still plugging away on that pig.
Still has a semi-decent chance of second overall.
He's tied with Fabio.
Yeah.
Beat Fabio in the title.
For the sake of pride, a quick rundown. Mir's got 171 points each champion guaranteed. Morbidelli has 142. Rins has 138. Maverick has 127. Fabio and Dovi still have 125. And Paul Espargaro has 122. There's six men who can still finish second.
KTM rider. Can finish second.
Including a man on a KTM. Yes. Who'd have thunk it?
Oh, Lord.
I don't know if that would happen, but if Paul has a good race in the finale, he could easily end up fourth.
Yeah, easily. The way that's played out. But we'll be back for MotoGP's season finale at Portimao next weekend. It's going to be tremendous. I cannot wait for this end of season finale, because not only have we got the fight for second over there in MotoGP for the first time in Portimao for the season finale, we'll also have two more title deciders in Moto2 and Moto3 with multiple riders eligible in those championships. We'll give you a quick rundown of Moto2 real quick. There was big title implications on this one, but not for the person you'd expect. Sam Lowe's had a horrendous high side in FP3 on Saturday morning. Bike landed on his wrist in the middle of that crash. It was a nasty accident. Thankfully, he was able to walk away and get it strapped up. He had to qualify about an hour or so later. He could only manage 18th, and he would go on to finish the race in 14th. His wrist looked like someone had slapped a tennis ball on top of it by the time it was all said and done. It was nasty.
There was a couple injuries. We didn't even mention it with MotoGP. Alex Marquez had a crash, and he had a bone marrow edema in his left hand.
Yeah. And, 23G impact on his coccyx.
On his ass, basically.
He landed on his tailbone. He landed on a bone of a part of a body that humans don't have.
Yeah.
Yeah. And meant that his wrist was falling asleep during the race, which is not what you want on a near as enough 300 horsepower motorcycle.
Nope.
Not it, Chief.
And that was only the second most gruesome injury of that weekend. Lowe's had to limp home in 14th. Still got two very, very important points in the context of the championship. Meanwhile, we also had a bit of heartbreak on that one because we got to the final lap of the Moto2 race. Fabio DiGiantonio leading by the better part of a second. He's half a lap away from his first ever Moto2 victory, and then he crashes at Turn 6's hairpin.
God damn it.
Fabio, not again. He's done this before where he's...
How many times has he been denied a win on, like, the last lap of a race? How many times?
Two or three times. Yeah, just slid out from underneath him, lost the rear, slid out at Turn 6, half a lap to go. DG costs himself the win with a spin. Marco Bezzecchi gets ambushed on the final sector by Jorge Martin and Hector Garzo. Martin steals the win and takes revenge from Styria. Remember that one? and how that one played out. Martin basically just took Bez's lunch money on the back half of the final lap. Hector Garzo with a career-high finish in second for the Pons team. Yeah, the Pons team. Where the hell have they been all year in Moto2? And Marco Bezzecchi would finish in third. Vital points for his title campaign taken away off the final race. So Enea Bastianini has a 14-point lead. He finished in sixth on the day. Luca Marini finished fifth on the day. So Bastianini has 190 points. Sam Lowes is 14 points back in second on 180. Luca Marini has 176. And Marco Bezzecchi has 171, 23 points back. So any of those four men can win the Moto2 championship next weekend. It is mathematically possible. Bez needs a long shot. But in fact, Bastianini is it would take a lot for Bastianini not to win the title, but if he falls...
He's got to keep it on the black stuff.
Right.
If he keeps it upright, he probably wins the title. If he doesn't... Goodness only knows what happens there with with second, third, and fourth only 9 points apart. I don't normally go for the whole British grit angle approach, but that was a hell of a ride from Sam Lowes to even get a couple of points, given his golf ball wrist.
Proper ride.
Yeah, proper riders. The proper riders ride there from Sam Lowes at the end there. We also had a breakout winner in Moto3. Tony Arbolino winning by a second and a half in that one, breaking off the pack and ends up taking his first win of the year. And Arbolino, all of a sudden, again, has an outside chance of the title despite missing a race due to having to self-isolate.
Wow.
He won Sergio, not the golfer Garcia, in second. He beat who was it now? It was Raul Fernandez 1-on-1. Yeah, he beat Fernandez 1-on-1 over the line to take second and third. Albert Arenas was in the second group in fourth, and Ayagura was eighth on the day in the end. So again, we have a three-way title fight going into the final round. Albert Arenas on 170 points. Ayagura minus 8 back on 162. Tony Arbolino third on 159. So King? The top three covered by 11 points.
King, I think we're going to have to get up early for this one.
Yeah.
Me and Cam, too. We're gonna have to brew some coffee at 3 in the morning, walk into the Discord in our PJs and our best slippers.
Yeah, 5 a.m. start. Important.
Bathrobe and Henny. Bathrobe and Henny. Hey, it's 5 in the morning.
Who's drinking? I mean, I know it's 5 o'clock somewhere, but it's typically not 5 in the morning.
I know. All right, Shannon Sharp down there. Jesus. Yeah, three big races on next weekend. The fight for second in MotoGP and two big world title deciders in the intermediate and lightweight classes. Agüero knows, Arenas knows first or second will guarantee him the championship in the final race, but this is Moto3. Good luck figuring that one out. Also a minor confession. You may have seen that in the background just then. I think I might have one-upped King in the takeout stakes there. That is a Domino's box in the background.
You piece of shit.
Wow. Oh my.
We're God. Even, King. We're even.
You actually ordered food.
I'm hungry. It's 11 o'clock p.m. here in the UK.
Is that the kebab pizza?
It is the kebab pizza.
Wow, that is excess. I appreciate the commitment to excess.
Like, why choose between a pizza and a kebab when you can have both?
What's
the answer, like most things, is yes.
Precisely. That'll do it for episode 280 of Motorsport 101. Please check out the MotoGP season finale at Portimao. It's going to be fantastic next weekend. Because who cares about Formula 1 anymore? Hamill's wrapped that up. Who cares? Get Bahrain out of the way. We'll come back for the oval on that one. Hey, MotoGP's two big title deciders going down to the wire in that one. It's going to be great. Places you can find us one more time. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101, facebook.com/motorsport101, Twitter at motorsport_101, handles on the screen at Harrison101HD, at RJ O'Connell, at Ryan Eric King, and at Doomguy917. we're also on Patreon if you want to back us financially on there, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our shows, audio wise, video wise, for the $10, as well as the supporters club and the Discord server. We'll be back probably in 2 weeks' time, actually, because we haven't actually got any major motorsport this weekend. Isn't that funny?
Wow. It feels like 2019 all over again.
You know what time it is?
Normality!
Guys? I know what time it is. It's
what
time
is it, Ken?
For that exalted watch party.
Nope, we're not tempted.
We're not watching Driven. I will fight people on the street.
No, not that one. I'd rather watch the Spermathon again than watch that.
Oh. Oh, dear. But, yay. I propose a week off, gentlemen. We've all earned it in here. We all need to rest up and recover. A week off. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time. Hopefully we'll space these out a little bit so we don't keep you too bored for content. But a week off, everybody. We'll see you in a fortnight for Formula One in Bahrain and MotoGP's end-of-season watch party for Portimao. Until then, I've been Dre Harrison. They've been Chris Pontius, Steve-O, and Johnny Knoxville. And until next time, thank you very much for watching. And this has been Jackass. Sayonara!
Bye!
Later, y'all!
Yamaha's valves really said rip and tear until it is done to their championship chances.
Also, on the watch party notes, next year is the 20th anniversary of Driven.
We're not watching Driven!
You're going to have to surgically tape me to the chair for me to watch that.
Oh, robot chicken style.
Oh, yes.